everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our show, Midweek Edition. It's Wednesday, March 16th, 2022. And Tom, a very warm day, mid-80s. So then it's going to cool off again, which is good.
Yeah, we're going to have a little bit of a roller coaster ride with the temps and a possibility of showers late over the weekend.
Boy, we need that rain. Looking at those rain totals, not very good. A very dry year, kind of reminiscent of last year, but then we were saved with one of the wettest summer rainy seasons on record. But we do need the rain this spring. Buckmaster, in our 12th year here on the radio, our 34th year on TV and radio in Tucson, we broadcast from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening. That means if you're near a computer anywhere in the world, just plug in BuckmasterShow.com and KVOI.com and you'll get the live feed. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will Humble is one of two dozen contributors, regular contributors to our program. Mr. Humble, the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. Will has 30 years in public health, including more than two decades with the Arizona Department of Health Services. He served at various positions there, including the agency's director from 2009 to 2015. Will Humble joins us on our live line. Will, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. How about you?
Doing well, trying to stay well. Wednesday is the day that the Arizona Department of Health puts out on the dashboard the case numbers for COVID-19. It used to be the cases were displayed every day. I got into the habit of certainly checking them out, and I know you have as well. I did check out today. Looks like a little over 800 cases for Pima County, which would translate into a caseload of over 100 cases per day, which really will still puts us kind of in the medium category, doesn't it?
Well, since we talked last time, the CDC changed the way they quantify community spread. And by the way, I support the things they did to change. Originally, they had just looked at cases per 100,000 as being the determinant for what community spread is like. And they changed that to include that also. They're included cases per 100,000. They're also looking at hospitalization metrics, both the number of new hospitalizations and then the percentage of persons in hospitals that have COVID-19. So instead of just looking at cases now, they've incorporated what I think is a good idea, elements of what's happening in the hospital system or basically clinical presentation. So not just the number of cases, but the severity. I should have said that earlier. That's basically what they did. And so right now, Arizona, most Arizona counties are on the threshold between moderate and low spread. I think Yuma and La Paz County are still in the, they're closer, they're flat stacked right in the middle of moderate, but you guys down there in Pima are on that cusp of moderate to low, using the new criteria.
What does it tell you about our hospitalizations?
Well, right now, things are looking up. I mean, every time I talk to folks at hospitals, they tell me what a big difference it is now compared to a month ago, and especially 2 to 3 months ago during that Delta wave, that, yes, there are people presenting with COVID symptoms that do need hospitalization, but very few end up in the intensive care units. And they're also able to now start catching up on a lot of those elective procedures that were delayed over that Delta wave and part of the Omicron wave.
Honestly. Well, there's a lot of people, Will, as you know, asserting that they're done with COVID. They're done with the COVID-19 pandemic, which may be nice to hear, but looks like the COVID-19 didn't get the memo. Based on this European upswing, are you concerned about it?
Well, be careful of the sources that you run with.
Okay.
Because I've seen a couple of articles, like one on CNN, for example, that somebody sent me, and it sounded very inflammatory. And I'm like, can you send me the, like, send me the source of what that journalist was using to write that? And then I looked at, it's a detailed document from the UK Ministry of Health, which is like an 80-page document. And when I read the actual source of the information, it wasn't nearly as scary as what I was reading on the CNN website. So be careful about drawing conclusions, especially these days. You know, there's a lot of clickbait out there where there are journalists that know they'll get more clicks if they make things sound worse than they really are. And that creates kind of a perverse incentive to overstate the risk. And that's what I have seen about what's going on in the UK. Now, having said that, there's definitely an upswing in cases in the UK. That's for sure. And there is a slight uptick in new hospitalizations, but that article that I saw from CNN made it sound like they're moving in tandem. That's what the words they used in the article, that the new cases and the new hospitalizations were moving in tandem. That is not the case. New cases are moving, but the new hospitalizations are going up at a much slower rate. And that reflects the fact that in the UK, they did a very good job of getting folks vaccinated, and those that didn't get vaccinated ended up catching Omicron and getting antibodies and T cells the old-fashioned way with an infection. And I think that's what we can expect to see here in Arizona and in the U.S. is an uptick in cases over time. You know, we're never going to get the herd immunity like we had hoped a year ago because it was just too many reinfections with this virus. It's too crafty. But that doesn't mean we can't get past this public health emergency. And I think, quite honestly, we're right at that threshold right now. The federal emergency is going to go on until the summer, probably. But I think we can expect Governor Ducey to drop the state public health emergency probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
The BA, I believe it's called BA2 subvariant of Omicron, seems to have had more of a foothold in Europe than over here. I think we've only had, what, about 12% of the cases in the United States with that variant, subvariant?
Yeah, and in Arizona, it's about, last time I checked on the TGen website, it was about 7 or 8%. But what's going on is those two versions of Omicron are bouncing along together, but the BA2 isn't, I mean, it's maybe slightly more transmissible, but it's not substantially more transmissible. And so you see, it's not going to take over. I mean, remember when we had Delta, how long it took Omicron 2 weeks to totally push Delta out of the way. And BA2 is not doing anything like that to BA1. And by the way, it doesn't matter that much because the clinical presentation of BA2 is the same as BA1. So while we can look at the genetics of the difference in the virus, there's really not a public health reason to care.
And a good question from my producer, Tom. Why do the new variants, Will, seem to show up first in the United Kingdom?
Well, good surveillance. You know, it could be that these are showing up in places like Cameroon, really, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't have the surveillance system and the technology and the research institutions to identify it, you're not going to find it. Take Omicron per se. Remember, it was found in South Africa, in the Republic of South Africa. Well, why was that? Well, it was because they've got great research institutions. They've got a really good surveillance program in their health department that doesn't exist in places like Malawi or Zimbabwe or Tanzania. And so that Omicron variant was probably circulating somewhere else in Africa, but just wasn't found, you know, because they didn't have the research institutions to find it. And you see that coming out of UK because they have good program. This is an interesting sort of diversion here, but why do you think that most interstate foodborne illness outbreaks are identified in Minnesota and Oregon?
Why?
Because they have great surveillance systems. Their health departments are better than everyone else's health department, and they're able to find it. And so it looks like these interstate things are all happening in those two states, but it's only because they've got more sophisticated staff, equipment, and resources.
Hey, I want to talk about your blog, and I know you're following what's going on up at the legislature from public health matters, but we're going to take our break first. But one quick thing about the blog, you mentioned Joe Gerald, the U of A epidemiologist. He's not going to be putting out his regular reports anymore about COVID.
That's right. He did it for every Saturday. I get it in my inbox for 2 years, mm-hmm. and he's taking a break just because, you know, things have gotten so much better, and he has a regular job he needs to do. This is all, he did all that work just on his own on taking his Saturdays out.
Yeah, he did a great job too, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, terrific service.
All right, well, hang on the live line. We're going to talk about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery. And, Will, when you get to Tucson, make sure you go and check out Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They do a beautiful job for lunch, but they're also, I think their signature are the breakfasts at Mona's, but more and more people are discovering the lunch menu, which you can check out at monasdanishbakery.com. Beautiful color pictures of everything on the menu. They open at 6:30 in the morning for breakfast, Tuesday through Saturday. Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Check it out. Wonderful pastries. I love pretty much everything they offer. And they're doing some really good sugar cookies now. Boy, they've really found a new way to my sweet tooth at Mona's Danish Bakery. More with Will Humble right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? Well, not all news is good news. You know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios midweek edition of the program. Green Things, what a perfect time of year to stop by. Temperatures today, mid-80s. Go by this afternoon. Beautiful 13-acre site. Conveniently located in that beautiful area by the Rito River, 3384 East River Road. Get your spring gardening, everything you need from these beautiful Talavera pottery from Mexico, and of course every imaginable plant that would that will do well for you. They don't really put things out that aren't going to do well over at Green Things. In their 51st year, GreenThingsAZ.com. They are open daily, and their sister business on site is ZocaloVillage.com for all that great merchandise, much of it handcrafted in Mexico and Europe. Let's go back on the live line now, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Will Humble is the Director of Marketing and Public Relations and the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He's the former director of the Arizona Department of Health Services, and one of the services that Will performs for the public is Will's blog, which is located at AZPHA for Arizona Public Health Association .org. And Will, you've been following what's going on at the legislature in your particular area of interest, public health. Are there some things our listeners should know about?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of things, and they probably just read the Arizona Daily Star and they'll learn about some of those things. I'll give you just a few examples. I'll give you a sleeper example that you're not going to read about in the paper that I think is really important. And that is that the Arizona State Hospital, which those of you in Tucson may not be as familiar with it, but it came with the territory. Actually, one of the first institution in the territory of Arizona was the Arizona State Hospital. It was then called the Territorial Insane Asylum. We don't use those words anymore.
No.
And it is part of the Arizona Department of Health Services, my former agency that I was the director of. And the ADHS, the state health department, is the regulator of all the hospitals, assisted livings, skilled nursing facilities. They go out and do the inspections to make sure that care is provided in a responsible way at all those facilities. And they also regulate the Arizona State Hospital. Well, this is a problem because they both regulate the Arizona State Hospital and they also run the Arizona State Hospital. And every listener will know that that's a terrible governance model. Because I was in that job for 6 years, and I kept a firewall between my licensing division and the people who run the state hospital. But it is as easy as pie to just make sure that you send in rookie inspectors who don't really know what to look for, or you could send in inspectors, then you ask them, geez, I don't really want to get into trouble by finding substandard practices at the state hospital. Please have my back. That's an easy thing to do. And I'm not saying that former director Christ did that or that interim Harrington is doing it, because I don't know, but it's easy to do and it needs to get fixed. And it's been a problem since 1974. That's how long this governance model issue has been going on. And there's a bill, Senate Bill 1716, that would create a commission to oversee the operation of the state mental hospital. And then the state health department would still regulate it, but they wouldn't have that same mission conflict. So that's a bill that I'm really passionate about, that I really want to see go through, because there are a lot of people who have been unhappy with the level of care that's been provided out at the state Arizona State Hospital. And in part, it's because there's a there's a bad governance model. You have the same entity regulating that that's running it. So that's one of the sleeper bills that you're not going to hear about, because but it's really important, I think.
And did it pass the Senate?
Yeah, it went through the Senate, and it's now going through the House. There, it's on the agenda for the House Health Committee next Wednesday afternoon. So I'm going to go down there and support that bill. And so that's just an I just wanted to bring something up for your listeners that they're not going to read about somewhere else. That's kind of interesting.
Well, before we leave the state hospital, I'm not really too familiar about the state hospital. Even I want to guess it's in. Is it in Prescott?
No, it's in Phoenix at 24th Street in Van Buren. If you'll allow me, I've got a Tucson link to this story, and I think your listeners will enjoy it. Some will already know the story. Back at the first territorial assembly, Lincoln established the state, the territorial capital in Prescott at first. And the first one of the first courses of business for those early territorial legislatures was to figure out what they're going to do with the land grant university and the state mental hospital. Each territory came with funds from the federal government for a state mental hospital or a territorial mental hospital and a land grant university. And the mental hospital came with a bigger appropriation. So that was the more desirable get. And the delegations from Tucson and Phoenix were headed to Prescott. The folks in Tucson couldn't get over the Gila because there was a big rainstorm and they had to go around. So they got to Prescott late. And by the time they got to the assembly, they had a quorum, and they had already decided to put the land, to put the state mental hospital up in Phoenix. And the booby prize, if you will, at the time was the U of A, with a land grant university went to Tucson. So if the delegation, if there hadn't been water in the Gila, the delegation from Tucson would have got to Prescott, and Tucson would have the mental hospital, and Phoenix would have the U of A.
Whoa. And so maybe instead of Old Main, there in the center of campus, that would be the campus for the state mental hospital.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, what kind of facility is it? I mean, have they upgraded it over the years up there in Phoenix?
Oh, yeah. There's a long, long history going back to the 1800s. And it's I blogged about it a while back. And it's there's three units. There's the civil unit. So those are persons that get care because they've got court-ordered treatment for a serious mental illness. There's about 110 persons getting care at the state hospital for that. There's a forensic unit. Those are persons who have been determined to be guilty except insane or not guilty by reason of insanity. There's two categories. And they receive care at the forensic unit at the state hospital. And then there's a third unit called the community treatment center. And those are persons who are determined by the courts to be sexually violent persons who are court ordered to stay in that state hospital as opposed to being released to the community. Most of them have done time at the Department of Corrections, but their time is finished. But they're determined by the court to be too dangerous to release to the community. So all in all, there's about 350, 400 persons getting care, but it's a really high level of care. It's very sophisticated care, which means you've got to have really talented staff and great resources and good regular oversight, you know, of the governance model. And that's why I'm so passionate about getting this fixed.
I've been looking at this. You've got a lot of, or there were quite a few bills related to public health. A lot of them failed. So I've only got about 2 minutes. Overall, what are some of the things to keep an eye on?
Well, there was a whole lot of anti-vaccine bills that were proposed by different legislators, and fortunately, almost all of them did not get out of their chamber of origin. Some never got assigned to committees. Some never made it out of committees. The most problematic of those anti-vaccine bills are finished for now, but anyone who's listening knows the legislature knows there's trap doors and sneaky tricks that can come out, and so there's nothing certain until they're finished. But right now, most of those anti-vaccine bills are gone by the wayside.
Anything else real quickly, Will?
No, just thanks for the indulging me to tell my little story about the state hospital and the U of A.
All right. So getting back to COVID as we began the discussion, that one article that you referred to that I think it was a CNN article. They were also saying that wastewater samples are indicating that COVID cases are going up in the country. Is there any truth to that?
Well, in those places that are doing wastewater sampling, you can see changes. And by the way, they did this at U of A. They did a lot of wastewater sampling down at U of A during the peak of the pandemic. And you could see, like, outbreaks inside of dorms because of what was in the wastewater. So if you do look, you can see trends, and it does show the amount of shedding from humans that are coming from certain particular areas. But given where we are in the pandemic right now, I don't know that it's of that much public health significance, because it's not really a big increase in cases is just going to result in a small increase in new hospitalizations.
All right, Will Humble, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Will.
All right, take care.
All right, for folks who want to check out Will's blog, it's azpha.org. All sorts of information at the Arizona Public Health Association, where Will is the executive director. We'll pause right here. Our Superstars of Science series is coming up next.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
A As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Time for our monthly Superstars of Science interview series presented by Biosphere 2. Joining me on our live line, John Adams. John is the Deputy Director and Chief Operations Officer for Biosphere 2. He's been through his two decades. He's seen so many of the changes and has been overseeing really the execution and evolution of Biosphere 2. To really into such a world-class facility that it is today. John, how are you?
I am doing great. Thanks for having me on, Bill.
John, tell me a little bit about the two-year period there where we've all, you know, had to endure the pandemic. Really, it was 2 years ago today that the World Health Organization declared this was a worldwide pandemic. How did Biosphere 2 weather the storm?
Well, like everybody, you know, we had to hunker down. We had to rethink how we were going to do research here, how we were going to provide opportunities for the public to come through. And so that's really transformed primarily the public experience into something I think we've thought about, but now we actually have realized it, and it's been overwhelmingly very positively received, and that's providing a tour through an app experience, but you still get to go and tour the ground. So it's a great transition for us.
How does the app experience work?
Yeah, so when you come into Biosphere 2, actually even before you get here, you can download the app. We've got a lot of great content that talks about the history of Tucson and the Sky Island, so people can review that. Once you get on site, then there are stops throughout the campus as you work your way through not only the grounds but inside Biosphere 2, and you can dive as deep or as shallow into any particular subject matter that you choose. And you go at your own pace. There's interviews from researchers. We've got historical videos on there, so it's really just packed full of great content that you otherwise probably wouldn't have ever had an opportunity to experience.
Do you have stuff of the original Biospherians going in and being sealed in?
We do. I mean, that's still people are drawn. We're all fascinated by humans and the nature of humans, and that original human experiment is a big reason why a lot of people are attracted, at least initially, to Biosphere 2. And so, yes, we do highlight that historical context and give them some of that historical footage to view.
What is the footprint currently for Biosphere 2? What do you cover there at the facility? Give our listeners kind of an overview.
Yeah, so if you drive on property, the University of Arizona took over the ownership and management of Biosphere 2 starting back in 2007. And so the University of Arizona owns and operates 40 acres. That's sort of the Biosphere 2 campus. That includes the Biosphere 2 facility, and so this is a structure that's a little over 3 acres inside. That's the iconic glass structure. And then there's a lot of associated buildings that support it, but we also have accommodations as our conference center. And so we have a number of academic and other conferences that come to the Biosphere 2 site and use the facilities for a half-day conference all the way up to, we just had a Harvard Physics winter workshop here, and they were here for over a week.
The University of Arizona has designated Biosphere 2 a center for innovation. What does that include, John Adams?
Yeah, so the university under the Tech Parks of Arizona have created these centers for innovation, and their startup incubator, it's really a startup incubator network that's located across the southern Arizona region. And so these offer these startups opportunities not only to be co-located with similar-minded folks who are looking to develop technologies, and we know that those synergies are important to oftentimes bring new ideas to market, but also it connects them with the University of Arizona. It allows us, the University of Arizona, to connect with them and provide not only research opportunities, but student engagement opportunities. And so Biosphere 2 is going to be one of these centers. We'll be formally announcing it here in early April, but we're really excited to have this opportunity. And the companies that are going to be here at Biosphere 2 are those that are focusing on sustainable and renewable technologies.
You know, when I'm reflecting on the original with the Biospherians and the whole establishment of Biosphere 2 in the early 1990s, people weren't talking, John Adams, about climate change. But it's interesting how Biosphere 2 has just evolved into really being on the front lines of what has become known as climate change and what we need to do about it.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I really think of it as remarkable. I started my career here nearly 25 years ago, and Biosphere 2 has continued to evolve and remain relevant when it comes to scientific endeavors such as this. And it's right here in our backyard, right here in southern Arizona, which is exciting. And, you know, this is the only place I know of that you can take a tropical rainforest system, it's a half-acre rainforest, and change the conditions like what we predict we're going to see in 25 or 50 years from now, and look at how does that system respond and change. You know, and hopefully that's going to give us greater insight into what's coming our way.
What about people wanting to tour the facility? Do you make it convenient for folks to stop in and take a look?
We do. So, you know, you can come and visit Biosphere 2, and we've got several different ways that you can purchase your tickets or collect your tickets. So you can go online, you can reserve a time. We have a lot of times that are available for folks who walk up. The only thing that I would recommend for anybody who's looking to visit Biosphere 2 is go ahead and take the time to download the app before you come. So go to Google Play or the Apple App Store, do a search for Biosphere 2, you'll see it, download it. You don't need to be on site to access the content. That's the great thing. And then, you know, go through some of the preliminary stuff beforehand because it's great information. We're open 9 to 4 every single day except Christmas and Thanksgiving Day. And so we'd love to see everybody up. And what a great time of year to be up here. I mean, just walking outside, it is absolutely spectacular right now.
Yeah, and you're a little higher elevation there, so it's an interesting kind of place to visit because it's usually a little cooler, isn't it?
It is. You know, we're almost 4,000 feet here, so a couple thousand feet higher, and so we're just slightly cooler. But, you know, not only is the vegetation surrounding Biosphere beautiful, but we've got a person that we brought on board. His name is Jason DeLue, and he's done a remarkable job at really revitalizing a lot of the plants and the systems inside Biosphere 2. And I will tell you that our desert system is just absolutely spectacular right now. There's a number of plants that are flowering, and so it's completely transformed. And so for those of you who had visited a few years ago, I really encourage you to come back now because the place looks completely different, especially when you're inside.
And just head up Oracle.
Yep, just head up Oracle. We're only about 20 minutes north of Tucson, you know, if you're in Oro Valley. But it's really an easy commute. It's a really beautiful commute. And the nice thing is a lot of the area is sort of growing up around Biosphere 2. So there's other opportunities. Come to Biosphere 2, then you can head up to Oracle or head up to Oracle Junction and see some of the other sites in the area.
We're speaking with John Adams, the Chief Operations Officer for Biosphere 2. April, of course, is Earth Month. Earth Day is coming up in mid-April. What are you doing especially for Earth Day?
Well, especially for Earth Day, what we've done is we've partnered with a local organization, and that is Run Tucson. And so we are going to have a 5K Earth Run here at Biosphere 2. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for people to come up. You actually get to run around Biosphere 2. There are some historical properties or buildings here on the property. So the ranch that was homesteaded here in the 1920s, you're actually going to run by that. The original Suffolk House, so this is Lady Margaret of Suffolk, heir to the Marshall Fields estate, you know, relocated to Tucson in the 40s. But her home is here. You're going to run by that. So it's just a great time to come out and get. And that's going to happen on Saturday, April 23rd. You can go to our website, go to Run Tucson's website. All of the information is there. But, you know, you can walk, you can run. You know, we even actually have a group of folks who come out who have varying degrees degrees of disabilities, and it's the Hoyt team, and they come out, and we even have folks in wheelchairs. So the course is conducive for everyone is my point here, and we'd love to see everyone out.
Boy, I didn't know about that. Being from Chicago myself, I didn't realize that connection with Marshall Fields.
Yes, she was the heir to the Marshall Fields estate and relocated here in Tucson. And in fact, those who are really familiar with Tucson, Suffolk Hills, which is now Immaculate Heart High School, that was originally where she was located. She, as my understanding, she donated to there and then thought Tucson at that time was encroaching on here. So those of us who have been here for a long time know there would have been nothing on that northern end of Tucson. She bought the property here that is bias for two and built a Spanish-style home, so it was complete with a courtyard and a pool in the center, and was here for a number of years until eventually she passed and the estate went up for sale and it went over to the Motorola Corporation.
Wow, interesting stuff. John Adams, Deputy Director, Biosphere 2, where he is the Chief Operations Officer. Always a pleasure speaking with you, John, and let's direct people to the website, which is pretty darn easy, right? Biosphere,
yep.
Biosphere 2, the numeral 2.org, and there's everything there that folks can plan for their visit. Thank you, John.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Everybody have a great day.
Thank you very much. John Adams with Biosphere 2. Coming up next, a very unique Tucson Rotary Club. It's called the Tucson Verde Rotary Club. We'll find out what that's all about right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Albernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Great time to take a road trip over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only a 3-hour drive, a little over three, depending on where you are in Tucson. Lots to do, hiking opportunities. And looking at the temps over there, mid-60s to about 70, perfect with that mile-high elevation. Same as Denver. You know, about 5,000 to 7,000 feet, depending on where you are. It's a great time of year over there. And to find out more, I would suggest visiting Southwest New Mexico, spelledout.org. You'll find out about places to stay and things to do. If you're looking for a service club with an environmental bent, you might consider the new Rotary Club of Tucson Verde. We have Ellie Patterson with us, one of the co-founders, and Michael Drake, the other co-founder of Rotary Club of Tucson Verde, with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Ellie and Michael, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Bill. Thanks for the invitation.
Tell me a little bit about...
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's our pleasure. Tell me a little bit about the club. What do you have in mind? Who are you aiming at as members?
Well, we are a cause-based club, and that's kind of a new club model for Rotary. And our cause-based club is the environment, and all of our projects are... activities, our programs are environmental based, and we just want to tackle, you know, climate change. We want to tackle recycling. We want to tackle all those issues that fall under the environment and protecting the planet.
Michael,
because we care about our community.
Sorry, Ellie. Michael, tell me a little bit about Rotary for those that don't know about what Rotary does.
Sure, Bill. Rotary International is a service organization, 117 years old, and Rotarians belong to a specific club. Rotarians engage in community service locally and internationally. We're supported by the Rotary Foundation for humanitarian projects. Clubs frequently have youth programs that they support. Humanitarian projects, exchanges, and engage in community service. We're trying to give back to our communities. At the same time, it's a great opportunity for people to develop presentation skills, speaking skills, and leadership skills. And it's a very rewarding experience. Both Ellie and I and our co-founder, Kirk Reed, are veteran Rotarians, and it's been a big part of our lives and very rewarding experience.
Ellie, what are some of the projects that the club has already implemented and are currently implementing?
We have a great projects team, and we've been doing a project monthly. And the projects have ranged from buffalo grass removal to community garden prep work for a local school. We adopted a city park at Miles Exploratory Learning Center. We assembled anti-strike kits to reduce the injury and death of birds working with the Audubon Society. We've worked with Native Seed Search, and currently we're rolling out the Grassroots campaign. And that work consists of assisting food establishments in recycling glass bottles that they use, collect, and throw away. We'd love to see all those bottles going to the free drop-off glass recycling bins at over 20 locations around the city. And then when that glass is collected, it goes to the glass crusher at Los Reales Landfill.
Now, as far as a time and financial commitment, Michael, could you give us the overview on that, please?
Sure. In terms of time, most Rotary clubs meet weekly around a meal. Mm-hmm. We are trying to make this new exciting opportunity both time affordable and financially affordable. We meet the first and third Tuesdays of the month at 5:30 p.m. for about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. And we have our projects primarily on Saturdays. Some of our committees, we call them teams, meet on Zoom otherwise. From a financial standpoint, as I say, we're keeping membership affordable. We currently are meeting at Augustine Kitchen over at Mercado San Augustine, and our members order from a menu and what they want and pay individually, so there's no meal cost built into dues. Our quarterly dues are $60, and from that we pay per capita dues to the Rotary International Organization and also to our District 5500, which covers 51 Rotary clubs in Southern Arizona. And then, of course, we have some club operating expenses as well.
Ellie, let me ask you about, are there some physical limitations that that you have for members, or can pretty much anyone who would like to help our environment in Southern Arizona participate?
Yes, anyone can help participate. We are engaging soon in advocacy work, and we've done some data entry work and just some like seed selection at Native Seed Search. So it's not all highly physical work. We also are doing advocacy work and outreach.
Michael, tell me a little bit about where folks could find out more information. This is kind of a new model, I think, for Tucson. I don't know if it's, is this something that's kind of catching on around the country with service organizations taking out kind of a niche of service? Or, first of all, where can people find out more information?
Sure. They can contact me, and I'll quickly give some contact information for me and Ellie. My phone, 520-400-5713. Ellie's phone, 520-360-7181. Or listeners can go to our website, TucsonVerde.org, and find contact information there for both of us to send us an email. But you're right, this notion of a cause-based club is new in Rotary. I can't speak for other service organizations. But, for example, we have clubs in the U.S. coming along that that advocate for veterans or that fight child sex trafficking. And there are a handful of other environmentally focused clubs. But people may not know about Rotary, Bill, but everybody knows about environmental issues. So we're finding that this new club we've formed is appealing to many people. They're interested, want to know more, and perhaps would like to join us.
So getting back to Ellie and your upcoming project, what can you give us a couple of that will be coming up in the couple of, in the coming months, Ellie Patterson?
Well, again, we're working on rolling out the grassroots campaign, mm-hmm. collecting bottles and helping the food establishments with that. And we also do the Adopt-A-Park, so we maintain that on a monthly basis. And we're going to be doing some waste reduction work, and we're working on that right now, and also other recycling projects, but also advocacy and outreach. So we're a brand new club, and we're just really excited, and we're taking action and having fun.
All right, there's the key. Have some fun. Ellie Patterson and Michael Drake, co-founders of the new Rotary Club of Tucson Verde. Good luck, and sounds like you guys are off to a terrific start. I'm glad we could tell our listeners about this new club. The best to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ellie and Michael. All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show, the midweek edition. We've got more coming up. Dave Ramsey, his very popular show, The Ramsey Show, talking about your money and how to make it work for you. That's coming up right after the CBS Network News. On behalf of Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon.